here. At unfetteredmind.org, you'll find transcripts of this podcast series, and these you can read or download free of charge. The transcripts are divided into small sections with audio clips. This makes it easy for you to listen to the specific passages that catch your interest. If services like these are useful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate so we can maintain and expand the site. Thanks.
Unfettered Mind, Pointing Out Instructions, Part 2.
Okay, on page 5, the intention on waking. Which actually pairs with the intention on sleeping on page 55. are ways to frame your day. One could use any variety of intentions, but here these are both formulated in terms of bodhicitta or awakening. Awakening mind. That's a way of just setting your intention at the beginning of the day and concluding the day, setting your intention for when you sleep, so forth. Setting intention is a very powerful way of creating momentum in your practice. The next section, the four reminders, the infamous the four thoughts to turn the mind. Everybody in the Tibetan tradition hates to hear because they hear it so often. This particular formulation comes from the Shankha Mundra, which we did in retreat. It's a little fuller than some of the others, but Rinpoche had me translate this way back in the 70s for one center, so. Every time I revised the translation, the center rebelled because they were used to chanting them every morning. Mm-hmm. Page 7 is refuge, followed by the Bodhisattva vow. Those of you who want to do the Bodhisattva vow on a daily basis on your own, this is the traditional form. Most of it is taken from Shanti Deva's Bodhicharavatara, just lifted straight out of that. But it's the relatively short form of the Bodhisattva vow that's used as daily practice, and which some teachers will use to give the Bodhisattva vow if they don't have much time. They don't have 2 weeks to give it in the long version, or 2 days, or whatever. Mountain offering ritual. In the retreat environment, all kinds of things are uncovered. One way to look at this, this is how we take care of the little nasties. This is a Nyingma ritual. Pema Trichen Tsal is one of the forms of Guru Padmasambhava. As far as I know, this particular ceremony is part of the Dujin Tericycle, which is a very new Tericycle, but one that parts of it became very popular in Tibet just shortly before the Exodus. And this is used pretty widely in the Kagyu and Nyingma traditions as a morning ritual. The refuge, awakening mind, and the seventh section prayer are all in the context of Dzogchen vocabulary. So, a couple of notes on my translation. Wherever you see all experience, as in the third line of the refuge, that's usually translated as all phenomena, which I think is a completely inaccurate translation because it goes to the objective pole of experience, whereas this is about just the term all dharmas refers to experience, not the objective pole of experience. I particularly like the seven section prayer phrased in this way. It's very simple on one hand and very deep on the other. Generation of self, you simply imagine yourself as Guru Padmasambhava in the form of Tudrin Sal, which means you hold a vajra at his heart and a skull cup filled with elixir in meditation posture. And I think he holds a vajra here. He may know it probably is here. That's how it usually is. It's one or the other. And then just imagining yourself as Guru Padmasambhava, you recite the seven-syllable mantra, Mahong Vajraguru Padmasiddhi Hum. Then the offerings are consecrated. Ram, Yam, Kam are the seed syllables for fire, air, and water, which are the three forms of purification. And the and you imagine the offerings, which is a bit of powdered juniper and sandalwood and so forth, which we drop onto charcoal, that this becomes huge clouds of offerings of everything that's just enjoyable and pleasurable in the senses. And that's blessed with the three syllables Amma Hum. Then the Namasarva Tathagatagaya mantra. Basically, I think actually we dug up a translation of the mantra, which should be footnote 3. It's not an actual translation, but it is the meaning is that you just imagine that these offerings fill the sky. It's a call to magnify mantra. And then the outer offering is what follows. And you just do the visualization as is. And in particular, what you're offering is everything wonderful and beautiful and very pleasurable to everybody you have it. Everybody and everything that you have any kind of karmic debt. One can interpret this in a number of ways, but one way is all of those emotions which you never wanted to feel. You know how those unpleasant feelings from the past chase after you, and you keep ignoring and keep suppressing them, and they keep disturbing your mind. Anybody have that problem? Mm-hmm. As anybody besides me? Mm-hmm. So that's one way of looking at karma debts, is things that you unable to, unwilling to, don't want to deal with, and it just chases after you, hassles you, creates misery in your life. And you keep suppressing it, and it just keeps going on. So this is a way of not suppressing it. You welcome it and say, okay, here you are, just whatever you want, just take it, be happy. And there's a exercise, which I think some of you have experienced with me, sort of the Mahamudra version of this. Think of something irritating, something that irritated you the last week or so. You bring it to mind and you say, I'm angry and I'm glad. And it just goes poof. And most people just end up laughing. But here's the thing that they were was being irritated by for so long, a few days, a week, it can go longer than that. And when you say, I'm glad, it's like just saying, okay, this is how I feel. That's how I feel. And now the whole thing just dissolves. And life goes on more quietly. So that's essentially what's going on here. You know, but there's the things that are buried deeper than this, the forces of darkness, of madness, the shades of woman dead and gone, ghosts of the murdered monastery, ghosts, house ghosts, ghouls and vampires. All the stuff that's buried in the basement. Buried in concrete. We don't ever want to dig up, but as long as we don't dig it up, it makes a mess of our lives. So we offer that. And when you're saying the mantra Om Ahom, you just imagine that all of the stuff is coming from above the sky or out of the sky and all over the place. Just out of your totality of your experience, and you're just getting totally blissed out on all these things that you're giving them. And so they're happy. They leave you alone. You imagine this huge fire which is giving off rays of light of all of the five colors, which condenses into beautiful offerings, wonderful food and fragrance and beautiful clothes and soap. Yes.
What if some of these beings want to harm people other than me? Take the vampires, for instance. If I want them to get exactly what they want, do they get to drink human blood?
No, you're offering everything beautiful, and it's so wonderful that they're completely okay with it. Then the next four verses are the inner offering. And if you skip into the middle of the second verse, you'll see the essences of this pure liquid drawn from all experience, patterned and free. That's my translation. Anybody want to guess what that's a translation of?
Inspiring the mind.
Yeah.
What is it?
Samsara and Nirvana. I feel like putting things into English now and then, you know. And then the verse starting with the fire offering of groups and elements. Groups here is the skandhas. The elements are the 18 elements of experience. All the standard Sabastavag and stuff. This is the secret offering. Because here's the transformation of one's own experience into aspects of awakening. And you present all of these, the outer, inner, and secret offerings. Past karmic debts, may they be cleared away. Current breaches, I confess now so that they don't continue. Future clouding, may not be caught in that cycle. So as usual, you just take care of everything. The Tibetan rituals are very good at taking care of absolutely everything every time you do them. And then when it comes down to barbarian attacks on the homeland, you imagine you have the sun in your left hand, the moon in the right hand, and you bring them together, which is the union of emptiness and compassion, which is awakening, and that's what stops the barbarian attacks and the interruptions and the bad portents and so forth. Is that clear?
The moon is in the back.
No, the moon's in the right. Sun. Emptiness is always in your left hand.
Emptiness.
Moon is compassion. What do they teach in school these days?
We go out the
Moon symbolizes compassion. Sun symbolizes emptiness. Emptiness. So, and then what follows then is the dedication prayers. Then you have the Sutra of the Heart, Lady of Perfection of Wisdom, often known as the Heart Sutra. Everybody understands that. No need for any explanation. And if you don't understand it, then you should read this book. If you don't understand it after that, then you'll have to go to Red Pine. It explains it all very nicely. Evening rituals. The long one is a a genre, an example of a genre of prayers called far-reaching cries to the Guru, often translated as crying to the Guru from afar, which I've never really understood as a translation, but so that's why I like to translate it as far-reaching cry to the Guru. In this, it was written by General Contra the Great in the 19th century, and he goes through all of the sources of or all of the great traditions in the Tibetan tradition. So after Buddha Amitabha, Avalokiteshvara, and then he goes into the Nyingma tradition, which is Padmakara, that's Guru Padmasambhava, his consort Rishi Dzogchen, and the Kama and Tenma lineages. And then Trimeyozer, I believe, is one of the names for Longchenpa, who codified all of the Nyingma teachings. And then Lord Otisha, who was the founder of the what became the Kadampa school, and that's the new translation school. Then the next three verses are for the Kadri tradition, the Marpa Milandapa Kadri traditions, then the Kama Kadri tradition, and then last of those three, all of the other Kadri traditions, which there are a total of 12. Then the Sakya, Shampa, Tantan Japa was part of the Shampa tradition, actually. Padampa Sangye and Lapchidroma. Lapchidroma was a Tibetan woman who became extraordinarily proficient in the perfection of wisdom, and Padampa Sangye was an Indian master who came to Tibet. And the two of them hung out together in the, I guess, 12th century. The 12th century. And out of that, two new traditions emerged, Padampa Sangye Shije, which is taken from the Heart Sutra, the mantra which calms all suffering. So his tradition is called calming, and Lapchidroma came up with what is known as Chö, cutting, which is, comes from the Diamond Cutter Sutra, the Diamond Sutra, which is another of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras. Chö became extremely popular, Shije less so, though there are still practice traditions of it. Dopo Sangye was a guy from the part of Tibet called Dopo, but he's responsible and is regarded as bringing one of the Kala Chakra transmissions to Tibet, or the main Kala Chakra transmission. Taranata continues that, and is also a holder of the Shangpa tradition. The next three verses are all to Jamyang Chense Wangpo, who is one of the great 19th century teachers and one of Contra's teachers. They were student and teacher to each other. And in the Tibetan tradition, you end up with all kinds of names if you hang around long enough. So these are three of his names. I can't remember which names they were. And then the next five verses, are all to Jamgon Kontrol. These are five of his names. Yuntan Jantso was his monk's name. Lodur Thay was his bodhisattva name. Pema Garje Wongchu, I think, was his Vajrayana name. Yungdrung Lingpa was his Bun name. He was also a Bun priest. So those are all to him. And then these wonderful verses which tell us, which are all too refreshingly honest about how we have to practice Dharma. So I don't think, if you have any questions about anything in those verses, let me know. But for the most part, they're very straightforward. There's this teaching, and I'm screwing it up this way, so please help me. Now there's this teaching, and I'm screwing it up this way, so please help me with that. aspirations for Mom, Mudra, is a prayer written by Rangjung Dorje, the third Karmapa, around 1300, I believe. And this has been a teaching prayer in the Kagyu tradition for the last 700-800 years. There's two or three commentaries published in English. The only one worth getting is the one by the 10th Siddhu Rinpoche, which was translated by Sherpa Dorje. His translation's okay, but the 10th Siddhu Rinpoche's commentary is very good. One by the 11th Siddhu Rinpoche, the current Rinpoche, is just not good at all. Now that's on tape, I'll be very happy. And I was asked to review it, and I was sent it back saying, I won't. It's the 10th Siddhu is a really, really good commentary. If we have time, we may go through that, because it describes the traditional approach to Mahamudra very succinctly, very clearly. The next ever-present good, some prayer of intention. This is a Nyingma prayer. It's been translated and published under the title Penetrating Wisdom, I think. Someone sent me that, and I recognized the prayer from one that we did in the three-year retreat. And the translation is completely incomprehensible, which made me so angry that I retranslated it. This is the retranslation. I'm sorry. I get angry about these things. Several people who knew that word said, oh, now I can understand this prayer. Yeah. It's really not very well done. Dedication and good fortune is before. Then we come to a shower of energy. Page 34 first. This is the Guru Yoga prayer, which is often used in the Kagyu tradition for doing 100,000 accumulations as part of Mundro. It's just a really, really good prayer, and I'll be talking a little bit about Guru Yoga this evening, because it's important in the context of Mahamudra. And so this is a prayer you can use for that. I've memorized it in Tibetan back when I was doing Mundro in the early 70s, and it's always stayed with me, and I just think it's a wonderful prayer. It was written by Jampo Bengay, I think. It was somewhere in the Kagyu lineage. But it's just a very nice prayer. The shower of energy is a song that Kala Rinpoche wrote, I think in Bhutan, I'm not sure, after he left Tibet. He's somewhere around there. I included it because it describes how one experiences the world in coming to the understanding or the experience of Mahamudra. And so it's something you can repeat and read or memorize, sing, do whatever you want with for inspiration. But it's very deep. One of my colleagues, a student of Rinpoche's, went to a Gelugpa teacher with this and said, could you explain this one? The Gelugpa teacher said, this was very deep, and handed it back to her. Starting on page 37, this is a text by Jigme Lingpa, who is a 17th century Terma. Often regarded as a reincarnation of Longchenpa. at the end of the three-week retreat, Dzogchen retreat that I did with Kelung Rinpoche, he handed me this text and asked me to translate it. And it's just great. So you can read and enjoy it. It's very, very deep. And, you know, like most of the other things in this book, it's all you need. Manifesting Absolute Reality. This is better known as the Genjo Koan, which was a short writing by Dogen, which summarized Dogen's instructions for Soto Zen practice. I included it so that you had that flavor. Occupies a very central role in Soto Zen, and his teachers will teach it just the way that in Tibetan tradition they teach something like the Mahamudra prayer or whatever. Dogen lived in the 12th century, I think, and it's a similarly timeless, in the 13th century. It's a timeless text. There are several translations up on the web, and I looked them over, and this is the one I like best. In the same vein, on page 44, there's verses on the faith mind, just so that people who are listening to this on the web. The translation of the Genjo Koan is the one by Francis Cook. And then the verses on the faith mind, this is another very famous song, or whatever you want to call it, called the Sin Sing Ming, if you'll excuse my mispronunciation in Chinese. Trust in the mind, or faith in the heart, it goes by a number of different names. This translation is by a person called Richard Clark, and again, of the various translations up on the web. It seemed to be the most readable. It's not the most famous translation. There's another one which is better known, but this one I think is a little bit better. And page 48 is the one sentence pith instruction. It should be instruction, not instructions. This is from Rongjun Dorje. They call it one sentence, but obviously it's more than one sentence. The word in Tibetan, tik chik is, you could say one phrase. The instruction is to practice this, do not cultivate anything whatsoever, let awareness rest free from all elaborations, vividly awake just as it is. That's all you need to know. We can go on now. And then it goes on to elaborate it a little bit. This is highly revered and has been passed down through the centuries in the Khyentse tradition. And then all the matter in the world is from a prayer. It's from a text called The Seven Chapters, which is a collection of prayers, a fairly big collection of prayers, that's used in the Nyingma tradition, which many people recite every day. They go like crazy reciting it. But this particular verse is from one of those prayers. I can't remember which one. Can't remember the name of the other one. But this is often used as a pointing out instruction in and of itself. Have any of you seen the movie All the Mornings of the World? Tulang Tandumon? Yeah. That's where I took the title of this, because there's this phrase in Tibetan which is so clumsy in English, and it is such a beautiful prayer. I've got to get away from those clumsy phrases, so that's why I said, and I don't know, I was thinking, Tilim Atendu Mond, all the mornings of the world. Oh, why don't we just call this all the matter of the world? And then everything just flowed in the translation. All the sounds in the world, etc. Couldn't quite keep it up in the next note, in the final stanza. And there's also some freedom in the translation. You'll see in the second verse, silence and sound without beginning or end is speech of the awakened. That's where I'm translating emptiness of sound. But I think this speaks better in English, at least to me anyway. Supplementary practices. This is the first one, the main one, is the Guru Yoga based on Sukha City, which I mentioned last night. And if those of you who want a formal practice of Guru Yoga in this retreat, then you can use this. Supreme Bliss is Chakra Sambhara, and so that's the form of the yidam you're using. If you want a picture of Sukha City, this is her on the cover, so you know what she looks like. She's pointing her finger at the sky, and if you look at page 53, three quarters of the way down the page, in italics, these are the pointing out instructions from Sukha City. Again, these are highly revered, and in space, empty and free from concept, plant the root of aware mind, plant the root and relax. And they all make it sound so easy. Mm-hmm. And then verses for the meals. You know, it's very interesting the way Buddhist vocabulary is shaping up in English. We have to do a bit of a clean-up job on this. One of my students, who's a very good educator, he's founded a number of schools, was very taken with this, and so he started using this for basically a place of grace. He has a Quaker background with his family. So he said, this food which comes to me through the effortless of countless beings, may it nourish and sustain me in my practice, so that I open to the compassion and wisdom of original mind. His children, who were teenagers at this point, were fine right up to this point, until he said, original mind, then they went, Dad! And they would have been fine. And when you look at it, of original mind is completely unnecessary. It's just that we get used to thinking this way. In Buddhism, this is what I say about cleaning up our vocabulary. So I open to the compassion and wisdom would be perfectly all right. I have to take responsibility for this because I wrote this verse myself. Somebody requested me to do so, and I put in the original mind. But in retrospect, we could just leave it out, and in turn become a source of nourishment for all beings. Anyway, he related that to me, and I just got such a kick out of it. I can just see two teenagers. Original mind, come on, Dad. Okay, any questions? I know this is a very quick overview, but I think it covers the essential points. Any questions on any of it? It's not speak now, forever hold your peace. You can ask questions later, too. Yes, Peter.
So
you
do that food prayer, I think, you recommend.
Pardon?
You recommend taking out the original mind part?
Well, I'll leave it up to you. All I'm aware is that we have certain ways of talking in Buddhist circles which aren't actually English. And I like to stay alert to these. And that's a small example. I mean, it's still English, but it adds a twist, you know. I mean, because you could put the compassion and wisdom of God, or your compassion and wisdom of this. And you don't need any of that stuff, actually, so you can just take it out. But I leave it up to you. I'm just pointing it out. Okay. Anything else? Yes.
Are you going to tell us how to use this in these 9 days? Can we read this stuff during these 9 days?
yeah.
No, you're to take these books and put them under your pillow and do absolutely nothing else. And then you'll get the blessings and everything will be fine.
I can do that.
We're going to use these the morning and evening rituals every day, just as we did today. And the rest of it is there to as resources, really, for your practice. So read it over. You read anything you wish in here. And you may find that certain things really speak to you and resonate with your practice. And so that gives you some support for your practice. And that's what this is really intended to support. One time I made the mistake of asking Rinpoche, you know, if he'd give me Dzogchen teaching. I don't know, Rinpoche always seemed to have something about Dzogchen. I could never figure it out. And so this is between the two retreats. And he had a stack of texts about this high by his on his table. And I recognized the stack because they were had been written by one of the retreatants, Richard Barron, actually, so some of you may know of, Chuki Nima, because they're all different pointing out instructions. Next half hour of the Rinpoche consisted of this. You just read them in Tibet and I listened to them. That Maha Mudra or that Dzogchen? That sounds like Maha Mudra to me. That Dzogchen or Maha Mudra? This went on for half an hour. I said, okay, I got the point. So, but there are thousands of pointing out instructions, and some people will read a couple of lines and just click with their practice. So I thought I'd put together a number of things which I found very helpful and useful, and in the hope that you might too. So I'm not asking you to study this, and there won't be tests at the end or anything like that. I'll get you in the interviews, don't worry. Okay. Leslie, did you have a question?
Well, in the context of the retreat, suppose you gave the instruction that we're resting, we're finding the resting. So when we're introduced to all these prayers and we're chanting them at great speed.
Rest.
So you may not get the full meaning.
Oh, it doesn't matter. The best way to chant these prayers is to chant them without thinking about them. Yeah, you just read them with your mind open and clear. When you read them that way, you'll find that whole blocks will go in because you aren't thinking about them. Okay? You know, we did the Maha Mudra prayer every night in retreat, like, for 7 years. And it's recited in most Kagyu monasteries every evening. And so at one point I knew it by heart, and it becomes very and there are many lines I've translated and gone over my translation many times, so there's some of the verses from the translation have stuck in my mind. And it's great because when you internalize things that way, then they're just there for you whenever you need them. And so one time I was giving a talk on the six perfections. And if you turn to the Maha Mudra prayer, if you go down to the fourth last verse on page 24, the basic ground consists of the two truths free from the extremes of order and chaos, the excellent path, the two accumulations free from the extremes of assumption and denial. The result obtained, the two benefits free from the extremes of existence and peace, may meet teaching which is free from error. Well, the two accumulations, which are goodness and awareness, that provides a framework for talking about the six perfections, so you can just use that and give a nice little talk on the six perfections. it's everything's there. So it's this is the advantage of practicing and using these kinds of prayers in one's practice. You find prayers that speak to you. They just read them or learn them and recite them every day, and you'll find that the articulations present in that prayer just become available to you in your practice. It would be very helpful. Yes, Janet.
You say if a prayer speaks to you, then you might want to pursue it.
Mm-hmm.
In this retreat, we're talking about, you know, finding relaxation or opening to experience.
Mm-hmm.
But if what happens when you read the prayer is that all hell breaks loose inside, is that a prayer that speaks to you? I mean,
sounds like it.
It sounds like it, but it certainly isn't relaxation. It's not.
So, what prayer did you read for all hell break loose? Just out of curiosity.
Aspirations for Mahamudra. I don't know why.
Well, good. Yeah. Did it start you thinking a lot, or?
No, but all sorts of emotion.
Oh, yeah, that sounds like it's speaking to you. You look discombobulated.
Yeah.
Well, remember what I said about resting. You know, you're going to get black and blue. Remember the princess and the pea? You see, you know, yeah, you have to understand these fairy tales. Wisdom in Buddhism is always embodied in the feminine. Okay? And perfection of wisdom is actually more of a kind of intelligence. And the definition of intelligence is to be able to make distinctions, to be able to discern differences. Now, most of us go blithely through our lives without being able to discern the difference between our reactions and what is real. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this creates a certain amount of suffering for ourselves and others. Here's this princess, and her discernment is so fine that she can tell that pea is at the bottom of 100 mattresses. So, when you really rest completely, in the beginning, all hell is going to break loose. This isn't a bad sign. A friend of mine would be saying, congratulations. Whenever I call him up, tell him how miserable I am, he says, congratulations. Students come in to see them in tears and says, your practice is going so well. He has them frisked for sharp objects before they come. Okay. So, any other questions on this? Yes, Tom.
What's your definition of a pointing out instruction?
Oh, it's a Tibetan term. Tibetan term is notru. No is the word for face or its longer form no, then it becomes the word for essence or presence. And tru is to tripa is the verb to introduce. So the way I'm sure this is how Kata Rinpoche would have answered your question. It's not how I would answer it. I'm just going to channel Kata Rinpoche for a moment. So, you know, it's like, suppose you and I are walking along and we run into somebody that I know. And I say, Tom, this is Jim. And so now I've introduced you to Jim. So what a pointing out instruction is, Tom, this is your mind. Say hi to your mind. So that's what a pointing out instruction is. It's pointing out your mind. Now, Most pointing out instructions require that one have a certain level of attention, because otherwise you look and you don't see anything. And you know, so it's as if I said, "Tom, this is Jim," and you go, "Jim, who are you talking to?" Which is what a lot of people experience with pointing out instructions. What are you pointing to? I don't see anything. Okay. Anything else? All right. A couple of things for this evening. Let me introduce you to a practice which is a complete practice in its own right. Performs many functions. And some of you will have run into this before. It goes by various names. One name, this is from a friend of mine, is the primary practice. And what this consists of is progressively opening to all aspects of experience. Now, the first aspect of experience which we are most familiar with is sensory experience. And one can start this process, usually it started with opening to visual experience, but one can start it with the kinesthetic experience of breathing or auditory experience. Taste and smell are a bit fleeting, they're usually the best places to start. And you just open to all of that. And eventually you open to all five senses simultaneously. And then the next step is to include the sensations of thought and emotion. Ordinarily, when thought and emotion arise, we don't experience them as sensations, we experience them as facts and fall into confusion. But in this, you raise the level of energy in the attention so that you just have the sensation of thought, that the thought comes and goes. It's fine. Emotions come and go. They're just there. So we start opening to the sensations associated with all the internal material.
Do you mean by the sensations of what thoughts and emotions arise, do you mean that the bodily sensations that rise concomitant with?
You'd be opening to those too, but there's also the visual or auditory component of a thought. You know, that's also a sensation,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Thoughts come up. Sometimes we experience them as voices,
right,
sometimes
right.
as just thought.
Or images, mental images.
Yeah, images. But but it's a sensation, it's a mental sensation, it's not a physical sensation.
Yeah,
okay. And the same with anger. Like, you know, certainly we'll have the contraction in the stomach, the gripping in the throat, the tensing of the hands, the urge to kill, and all of that stuff. But there's the actual sensation of anger, too. Okay. So you open to that, and this is progressive. You keep adding. You don't move your attention from one to the other. You just keep including. We'll do this together. I'm just describing it first. Then, when you can rest in that field, you find yourself resting in a field of experience. There's normally we say this is inside and that's outside, but actually it's just experience. And inside, when you open it to it, it's just experience, then inside and outside get a little dubious. Then the next step is to open your heart. Because we may be able to open to all of that, but we still keep something a little closed in here. You open the heart, that allows another whole level of emotional opening to experience to arise. And then finally, you open to awareness. And you do that as you're sitting into this whole field by asking, what experience is this? Not with an intention of answering that question, but when you ask that question, there's a shift. And so now you become, in a certain sense, aware of awareness. And now you're in the totality of experience, sensations, thoughts, feelings, open heart and awareness. That's what life is. And now, needless to say, you may not be able to do that straight through. Often people work at this progressively, building up their capacity to be open to everything. When you can stay in the totality of your experience, then you're done. Very simple.
Yeah.
Yes.
More about opening the heart.
What's your question, Ralph?
How to do it.
So, have you ever opened your heart to a person? So, how do you do it?
Being with them the way they are, with compassion.
Mm-hmm. And there's a certain gesture that takes place in you, right? Okay. So, there's that Zafu. Right? Open your heart to the Zafu. Now, it's something we don't ordinarily do, but is there any problem? Good.
Thank you.
It shifts, doesn't it?
It does, there is.
Yeah. That's all. Any other questions before we do this together? I'll do this in the form of a guided meditation. So, you'll do this with your eyes open. I think we'll do it with the experience of breathing tonight. That's where we'll start. So, just settle in your body. And bring your attention to the experience of breathing. Don't look at the experience, but rather rest in the experience of breathing. As you do this, you'll notice that there are certain body sensations and body movements. So just open to that, to all of those. There's the sensations of air at the back of the throat, movement of the chest, movement of the diaphragm. Stomach. You may find that there are all kinds of parts of your body that move very subtly in connection with the movement of the breath. As you breathe in, your back may straighten up a little bit. Breathe out, it bends forward a little bit. Your chin may move a little bit. So open to all of those body sensations. And as you rest in the experience of breathing, you may become aware of the play of light and color, shadow, that constitutes your visual experience. The play of different sounds that constitute our auditory experience, sensation of the clothes on our body, resting on our seat, tactile experience. There may also be tastes and smells. So you're resting all those sensations. Now your attention may go to one or another. Whenever it does, just expand from whatever you find yourself focusing on back to the whole field of sensory experience. So you keep including. Until you can see everything in this room that's in your field of vision. Hear every sound. Feel every sensation in your body. All at the same time. And then include any thoughts. Any feelings, any emotions, beliefs, values, ideals, whatever is up, whatever is you're experiencing right now. Don't move from the sensory sensations to the internal material. Just include the internal material in addition to the sensations. So you're completely in your body with all its sensations. You're in the totality of all the sensory sensations. You include all the thinking and all the stories as mental sensations, and all of the emotions, reactive, responsive, higher, lower. Doesn't matter. Just include everything. And you find that you're in a field of experience. Now just rest in that field. Then let your heart open to everything that you're experiencing. And as you rest in that, ask, but don't try to answer, just include the shift. Ask the question, what experience is all this? Relax, look around the room. Questions? Randy.
As you move through that additive process, do all this, or should all the sensations and experiences kind of retain their clarity, or do the ones behind kind of get a little...
We just moved through this in a very short period of time. This is something you can work at until you can stay totally clear in everything.
Wouldn't that be millions of things?
Only if you count. They're there. They're being registered. We are usually narrowing our focus so that we aren't aware of them. That's all. Very good place to practice this is a shopping mall at Christmas time. Go into a glass store. Yeah, all those reflections. Every one of them. Here, take a tree. Sit in front of that tree until you can see every leaf, or if it's a pine tree, every needle. Guess what? You can't think your way through this.
Well, I'm wondering, like, if I was just focusing on a single needle with a very precise focus,
no.
Would it be like that times a million? Would
see,
it be a very different
I thing? Told you, you can't think through this. You do it. You want to figure out what it's going to be like so you know whether you're going to be doing it correctly. You know? Hopeless. Just do it. Sit down and punt in front of a pile of gravel till you can see every stone and every shadow cast by every stone. I have a carpet here. See every thread in the carpet. It's all part of your life, you just aren't usually paying any attention to it. But I guarantee you won't be able to get at this by thinking. And trying to understand this practice will not help you to do it. That I can also assure you. What next? What next? You have another question?
No, that's it.
You sure?
Will it just be more of the same?
That's my thought.
You don't need any more.
Just wanted to make sure. Okay. No. Yes, Peter.
I found something, you know, going off somewhere. And
you took a thought as a fact.
Well, I don't know what I did.
But you collapsed down onto a thought. That's what happens.
Yeah.
So as soon as you recognize that, expand from that thought to include everything again. No, if you get totally lost and things like that, then you just let everything go and start again with the sensations. It's best to start with the body sensations. It grounds us, it gets us out of the stories. But you'll find that something will grab you and ta-da. You come back 5 minutes, 5 hours later, and go, that was nice. But it's not meditation. And you're quite right. We get grabbed by these things. Other questions? So you can do this as your practice, or you can do this as part of your practice. You can use it to generate a level of attention, which it does. Or you can use it to practice resting, which I'm going to talk about now. Don't have much time, but we'll go a little longer. The base of attention is very important for Mahamudra practice. I've described one way of developing a base of attention. It does a lot of other things. Now I'm going to give you another approach to practice, which is more traditional Mahamudra practice. This is from Gampopa. Don't chase after the past. Don't invite the future. Don't dwell on the present. Relax and rest. These are known as the four words of Gampopa. Don't chase after the past. Don't invite the future. Don't dwell on the present. Relax and rest. Now, what happens when you hear these words? Anybody? What happens? What do you experience? You relax. Okay. Anybody else?
You want to figure them out with your rational mind.
Ralph?
You want to figure them out with your rational mind.
So you experience thinking?
Yes.
Okay. And Anybody else?
I get some nausea.
You're getting nauseous.
Just a little bit.
I feel like I'm falling.
You feel like you're falling.
I'm grabbing at things.
Pardon?
Grabbing at things.
Well, this is very helpful. Let's start somewhere else. I want you to breathe in and breathe out calmly and smoothly without any strain or effort. At a certain point, the out-breath will finish. When the out-breath finishes, I just want you to hang there, to use a modern expression. Let the in-breath come if it does. But you just rest exactly where the out-breath, the end of the out-breath, leaves you. Let's just do that now. Breathe in and then breathe out. Okay, look around the room. Move your body a little bit. Then settle and we'll do it again. So breathe in a little bit and breathe out gently and smoothly until the out-breath naturally finishes, and then rest right where it leaves you. Around the room. Move your body and do it one more time. Breathe in, then breathe out smoothly, gently, naturally. And then just rest wherever the out-breath leads you. What was your experience with this, Chuck?
It was like an ending, almost like a dying meditation.
What did you experience?
Like completely letting go.
What was that like? Describe to the best of your ability.
Well, the point is, there's not a need to even take a breath. You just sort of, after it's all over, you just, it's just finished.
Anybody else? Nancy.
After a few breaths, then I had this like body sensation of sort of a release or relaxation at the end.
Where did the out-breath leave you? Or how did the out-breath leave you? How was that?
How did it?
Yeah. What were you experiencing at the end of the out-breath?
That release.
So describe it as best you can.
It's an inner sensation of, I guess, just letting go.
Anybody else? Ken?
I felt at one point as though I were being breathed rather than that I was breathing.
Okay. Anybody else? Charles?
At first there was a fear. Is the next in-breath going to come? Then there was this bizarre feeling of both groundedness and falling at the same time.
Okay.
And then the third time we did it, there was a very vivid awareness of certain sensations around the abdomen.
One more.
Initially, the feeling of, is my breath going to happen, which I had early on, went away. And it felt like, it doesn't matter.
Okay. Now, at the end of the out-breath, what were you aware of? Anybody else go along with that? How many? Yeah. You're aware of nothing. To be a little more precise, you're aware of no thing.
Emptiness.
Pardon?
Felt like things went empty.
Yeah, though I was avoiding that vocabulary. You're aware of no thing. Now, was this like empty space?
No.
Was it like nothing was there? What was it like? Randy?
Real calmness.
Yeah. There?
The quality of coming into a clearing. Open.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But there's no thing there.
No.
Okay. So, this is how you practice shamatha and mahamudra. This is how you practice resting the mind in mahamudra. There's no object on which you're resting the mind. You're resting the mind on no object. You're resting the mind on nothing. But that's meant quite literally. You're resting the mind on nothing. Now, initially, you're only going to be able to do this for very short periods, probably 1 to 2 seconds. That's where you start. And you can do it in exactly the way that I talked you through. Breathe out. just rest where the out-breath leaves you. The in-breath will take care of itself, as several of you observed. Don't get fascinated with that. Because as soon as you become fascinated with that, now you are not resting on nothing. You're involved in being fascinated. It'll happen. So it'll take a little practice. All kinds of sensations and thoughts and feelings are likely to arise. As long as you have that quality of resting, it doesn't matter. But you'll find that the quality of resting moves in one of two directions. The sense of knowing disappears. So it's like it becomes dull. You know what I mean? It sort of dull out. And so you're still resting, but it doesn't have that lively, awake quality. That's one direction it goes. The other direction is that you start thinking about something. There are all kinds of candidates. Oh, I'm being breathed. Now you start thinking about something. And this happens to all of us. You know, or some thought comes out of nowhere and we just go with it. So you either move into dullness or you move into activity. As soon as you recognize that, let everything go, just relax completely, and then start again. The better way to practice, however, is to let the mind rest that way and then stop before you've degenerated into either of those directions. There's
stopping the movement towards dullness or activity?
No, not stopping movement towards dullness or stopping movement into activity. Stopping while you're still clear and present.
Right.
So you just, you noticed that I said, okay, rest, okay. And I said, stopped. After a relatively short time. I said, okay, now look around the room, move your body. So this is known as destroying your meditation or breaking the meditation. You break it while you're still clear and present. And then you start again. In this way, you start experiencing, at first, very short periods where you're completely awake and present. You're clear and empty. Now, you'll do this, and after, depending, you know, 5 minutes for some, 10 minutes, maybe as long as half an hour, you'll run out of juice. And you just won't be able to do it. It'll just be jumble, jumble, jumble. Then relax. Get up. Go for a walk. Do some qigong. Or do a different practice. And then come back to it sometime later. This is what is meant by short periods, many of them. Because in the beginning, it's just going to be a second or two. You can move from that and then do the primary practice, which that progressive opening, that often will rejuvenate things a bit. Then you can come back to this way of resting. That's why I gave you both of these techniques. If you really run out of juice and you're just a mass of thoughts or a mass of dullness, just stop. go for a walk. As you walk, coordinate your breath and the walking, that is. Notice how many steps you take with each breath and then just keep it. So you're keeping some sense of mindfulness going. Don't look down at the ground. Well, I suppose you need to a little bit here because the snakes. But if you're walking on... Yeah, rattlesnakes. But if you're walking on the road or something like that, then just... you know, you can walk down here and walk on a flat road. It's very good for this. Flat surface is better for this. And and so, in just walking in quietly in that and naturally in that way, body and mind will be refreshed. Another way that you can walk, which is probably my favorite way of doing walking meditation. How many of you have done any log rolling?
Anyone?
Log rolling. What do they teach in school? Well, you stand on a log and you start walking and the log turns under. And you've got to stay right in touch with the log, otherwise you get wet. So as you walk, you're rolling the earth under your feet. That's how you walk. You feel that you're rolling the earth under your feet. You're not going anywhere. You're just spinning the earth under your feet. So you can try that as your walking meditation. Works very well, I found. Okay. Had enough for tonight? Know what your practice is in the morning? Or actually this evening. I'll do it right now. It's 8:22. Okay, let's take a 10-minute break. We'll start at 8:30. Okay.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.